Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
Hello, this is Angie DeRosa, Senior Editor of Contemporary OBGYN. There is a group of dedicated scientists in women's healthcare that is on a mission to ensure diversity and inclusion in every area, including research groups, studies, any institution where scientific research and decisions are being made that affect women. If it concerns women's health, they are at the forefront of ensuring that women scientists are on boards and panels and that the interests are being represented. The Women's Health Collaborative has been formed by this group of scientists, which includes Dr. Mikkel Elovitz, its outspoken executive director, who you will hear from shortly in this video presentation. The Women's Health Collaborative's mission is clear: empower women from diverse backgrounds to succeed and become leaders in science and medicine in the field of women's health. What provoked the formation of this group was the creation of the Burroughs Wellcome Fund Pregnancy Think Tank, which was part of the fund's effort to advance human health in the decade ahead with pregnancy as a key window to discovery. That's according to the fund and a special report that was published in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. A working group was formed, but Elovitz and others were dismayed at the makeup of the group. For purporting to support diversity, the makeup of the group was anything but diverse. Dr. Elovitz and two other doctors wrote to the editors of the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology and asserted their position. The think tank was made up of personally and professionally affiliated white scientists, 16 of 17. 13 of 17 were men and included only one practicing obstetrician. Contemporary OBGYN offers this video interview with Dr. Elovitz to inform its readers of the creation of the Women's Health Collaborative. We also reached out to the Burroughs Wellcome Fund, whose president and CEO, Dr. Louis Mulia, provided a written response. Dr. Mulia said the following: "This think tank was a one-time event created to bring in researchers from outside of reproductive sciences to help add new and diverse perspectives with a basic science focus. Our intentions were not to exclude anyone, but the meeting was limited in size, with usually a single person per discipline. As we have conveyed, we will be more intentional in prioritizing greater diversity of individuals, as well as disciplines, as we convene future efforts. Burroughs Wellcome Fund, as an organization, is committed to this core element of all we do moving forward." He also continued, "I applaud Dr. Elovitz and her leadership team in creating the Women's Health Collaborative. This initiative highlights the need to maintain attention to all aspects of diversity, and we would welcome the opportunity to help support this collaborative. We share the same goals." Take a listen to the video interview with Dr. Elovitz. Let us know what you think about how women and minorities are represented in science and specifically the OBGYN field. Thank you.
What's important to me is that people stand up. What's important to me is that people join us. It is a core group of women, and now with hundreds of other women supporting it. So I think for years, many of us have talked kind of back and forth about inequities and our frustrations, either individually for our mentees, for each other, kind of these roadblocks that keep coming up, whether it's with promotion or being on boards or the fact that we are a group of women doing women's health research and routinely on the podium in front of us is a line of white men. It has been frustrating, at times defeating, and those conversations have happened for years. I think in the last year, that had naturally started increasing with George Floyd's murder, and along with so many other murders of Black men and women in this country. The idea that people are finally having some reckoning, if you will, it's hard for me to really talk about reckoning because this didn't start 6 months ago, right? This has been going on for decades, if not 400 years. But there is somewhat of a reckoning now. And I think between the bubbling of gender inequities and then the acknowledgement of the really severe racial inequities mm-hmm. around the world have come up. And women's health, unfortunately, is no different and no better. So those two combined were kind of mulling around in the underground of those of us who were talking about it. And then this think tank came up. So that was kind of the match that lit the fire and moved us to action. So there was this think tank that was published in the American Journal of OBGYN.
Yes.
It was sponsored by the Burroughs Welcome Fund. We can talk about that in a minute, but that for, so there's a few of us and my friends that work in this field. And I was on Twitter scrolling, I think it was a Saturday morning, I think. And I saw this article and I'm like, pregnancy think tank. So very egotistically, I'm like, I wasn't involved in that. I do a lot of this work. So I start reading it and I'm like, so first I was struck, to be honest, by the science. It was all on genetics. I'm like, we're still doing this? I'm like, with everything else that we know about women's health, with everything we know about obstetrics and pregnancy and disparities, yes. We're talking about genetics. And so I was had already sent one of my friends a message on Twitter going, did you read this article? And then as I started reading it, I looked, I'm like, well, who's part of this? Who's making these decisions? And I was just, to be honest, mortified. I was mortified. It was the same people, the same men who have been doing these panels and think tanks for the last two decades. And it claims to be an innovative approach in bringing in new ideas, and it's not true. The Burroughs Welcome put out a grant to do this exact work that I'm assuming will fund the people who are on the paper. And as we discussed it in our Twitter among us, and then by email, the discontent, which is the polite way of saying that, grew, and the Women's Health Collaborative was born. So it was already there, right? It just took this to, and Kathy alluded to that, and Dr. Spong alluded to that in her editorial. The good thing that came out of this, it was, and I guess it was the match we needed. We've all been talking about it. We've all individually been doing things, but there are powers in number, and there are some amazing, amazing women out there. And they are all, not all of them, but many of them are now part of this collaborative, looking to take the action that is needed to change the workforce and our women's health research.
Does Burroughs, have you let them know that this exists?
They know it exists because they're following us. And they know it exists because in our letter to the editor, they had to respond to it as part of the journal's protocols.
Okay.
And they know it exists because we reached out to both the first and senior author of that paper before we went public with it, asking for some acknowledgement of our concerns. The Burroughs Welcome Fund and Lou Maguglia issued somewhat of an apology on Twitter within 6 hours of our, I don't want to call it a Twitter storm because we're still not that compared to the rest of Med Twitter and the Twitter world.
Yes.
We're not, don't have that power, but we created enough of a storm in our world. So there was a apology. I would venture to say that some of their explanations about the think tank in both emails to us and publicly are insufficient. There is this persistent response about how there's a pipeline problem, that there is not women or women of color or Black women that are able to do this work, and that is completely and utterly false. OBGYN is 80% women, and the specialty has the highest number of underrepresented minorities than almost every other medical specialty. And there is no pipeline problem.
When you respond to Burroughs, have they responded back about there not being a pipeline problem?
There were responses that in the group that was originally brought together, that there was more diversity in that group, but the authorship ended up being what it was. I don't really have an answer for that.
Yeah.
And to be completely honest, we stopped asking. It is beholden on them to make changes.
Yes.
Right. There are some women who are part of our Women's Health Collaborative that are on their advisory board, and that is their mission. And as a nonprofit, they have to be held to that. And we're happy to provide the pipeline if they need it.
How many do you have in this group now? Can you talk about that?
So there is a core dozen women who kind of, we all work together to make this happen.
Yes.
And then we have a group of OBGYN chairs who are very involved and committed. That group was initially 5 OBGYN chairs. It's now 10 that are very committed to this mission and to bringing it. So first of all, they empower just by being OBGYN chairs, but also bringing it to their departments, universities, as well as being able to bring that message on a more national level, if not global level. And there are, at this point, the listserv has somewhere around 300 plus women signed up to say, I want to be on the listserv. And it's not actually just women, but it's mostly women.
So I did want to go back for a minute and talk about some of the data from the NIH and get your take on that. The data that Dr. Spong included, 2019 being the first year that federal funding for women's health research was actually classified based on scientific relevance.
Yes. So let me give people an example. So if someone wrote a study,
yes,
about cancer, right? It's like colon cancer. And their recruitment population was 20% women. That counted as women's health research. That seems to mean, so it's important for women to study colon cancer, but that's not women's health research. Women's health researcher is cancer research that focuses on endometrial cancer, ovarian cancer, cervical cancer, breast cancer. A study about using drugs to control diabetes that has 30% women is considered women's health research. That's not women's health research. If it was studying the sexual dimorphism in responses to drugs, that might be women's health research. But to tag just because a woman was in a study is by no means women's health research. So you're crediting the Institute for funding women's health research when it's not funding women's health research.
And so when it comes to these systemic issues that we've all talked about and we all know about that are just mortifying, the maternal mortality rate, the systemic racism and sexism issues that have been institutionalized.
Yes.
And trying to get down to the granular level of why these problems exist takes bringing in that diversity.
Without a doubt.
And you covered that.
Without a doubt. You can't, right? So what struck all of us so much about that think tank article,
yeah,
and it's to us, you cannot take out the people doing the work, the people doing the science, the community, and who's getting the care. Those are intertwined. To say that there's a panel of men deciding what's happening to OB outcomes just doesn't seem to make sense, right? And as you spoke about, maternal morbidity and maternal death in Black women is at unacceptable rates. But they're not part of the conversation. They're not part of the science. That is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right. And you can see, at least to us, the lack of diversity in that authorship absolutely contributed to the lack of diversity in science. So we're perpetuating this misogynistic approach or this elitist sexist approach that is absolutely influencing the science which undoubtedly then influences our patients. So if it's limited here and here, we're making no difference in the patient care. And that's the problem.
And that's, and it's this complex issue that obviously isn't going to be solved overnight. But let's talk about how COVID really, in a lot of ways, from what I've seen, exposed it. Do you think so?
I think maternal morbidity, preterm birth, and a lot of the OB outcomes. So from an obstetrician point of view and a physician scientist, it should have been exposed a decade ago, if not more, right? Maternal mortality, preterm birth, preeclampsia, cardiovascular adverse outcomes, all of these are significantly higher in Black women, mm-hmm. right? I didn't need COVID to show me that. The rest of the world apparently did. And it's not just me. I think the majority of my colleagues didn't need COVID. COVID just again, both reaffirmed uh-huh. the disparities in outcome, but also reaffirmed the racist approach to those disparities, right? The initial reports when we saw that people of color were more affected by COVID was, it's something about people of color. No, it's not something, it's about where they live. It's about how they're treated. It's about the environment in which they are put in, right? Mm-hmm. Race is a social construct, not a biological event.
Yes.
And that is, again, what has been reaffirmed by COVID is that it's not just that there is disparity in outcome, right? So in the OB world, we knew that. This just confirms it.
Okay.
But it's also the underlying sexist and racist approach to that, right? There must be something about the dogma is there must be something about people of color that make them more likely to get it. And the assumption is something biological, but it's not.
Okay.
It's where they, I mean, there's data out of New York. It is by zip code. Right? It's where they live in neighborhoods that is contributing to higher rates of acquisition and severity.
In the piece that, diversity is essential for good science and reproductive science is no different, that will a response to the recent formulation of the Burroughs Wellcome Fund Pregnancy Think Tank, you all wrote about those marginalized groups, mentioned those marginalized groups. Poor women, Black, Indigenous, and women of color. And of course, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, queer questioning, intersex, asexual community. This statement stayed with me. The time is now to open up seats at the table and allow them to become critical participants in developing that strategic research plan to tackle the problem of adverse pregnancy with and in the name of meaningful science. It's not an opportunity to be missed to build a deep bench of scholars and leaders for the future. It's a lot to take on, but you guys are doing it.
We are.
And how long do you think, from your experience as a scientist, it will take for some meaningful change?
Are we talking to the hopeful or the pessimistic side of me? So first, I do want to acknowledge that those amazing words were written by my friends and colleagues, Dr. Indira Mysakar and Dr. Elizabeth Bonney. And so they are really responsible for writing those very meaningful and powerful words. Yeah. So we are at an interesting point in our lives where the opportunity to evoke change feels like it's right in front of us. Mm-hmm. It sometimes feels like it's a carrot we're chasing, but it does feel like there's this unique opportunity, which is why I think so many of us feel a sense of urgency. Because I think we are concerned that the door is going to close, that people are seeing this as a time of reckoning. Uh-huh. But then it's going to go away. And so we feel the burden and obligation to make sure that door does not close. And I think what's so unique about the collaborative uh-huh. is very different from other task force and other groups that are part of societies that are specific to a certain area of women's health.
Yeah.
We were very intentional that the Women's Health Collaborative should span all of women's health. So it's not just about pregnancy.
Okay.
It's not just about women's cancers. It's about all of it. It's about all that we do in women's health, from general OBGYN care to HIV prevention to women's cardiovascular disease, all of it, right? Our goal is really to span women's health because we believe there is power in our collective voice. That makes it unique, and we hope is able to incur more decisive action by taking this approach, by bringing us together. And so that is what is very unique about the collaborative, in that we can, in the nicest way, infiltrate existing systems and processes and bring change to bear.
Yes, because that's what it's going to take, is all of that coming together. So I see these younger women and I see how much they love the sciences and getting into the sciences and teaching them to work together, but knowing that we have to push that. And that to your collaborative, to the point with your collaborative, that that's what has to happen. There has to be this sustained effort.
Yes, there does. There absolutely does.
You can't take your foot off the gas.
No.
And that's what it sounds like you guys are doing. Like, you're like, this is our response.
Yes.
After decades, from your perspective and the other, you know, health practitioners, of seeing it and seeing the outcomes.
So I think there is definitely an urgency. There is definitely this need to not just push on the gas, to push it hard and not to let up. And I think that comes from two things. It comes from seeing our patients suffer. It comes from seeing our colleagues suffer. And it comes from some of our own suffering. You know, many of us have been in this field for 20 plus years.
Uh-huh.
And we all have our stories. And unlike, I think, prior ideas about, oh, everyone should have to go through this, we don't want other women to go through this. We don't want them to climb a hill full of ice, covered in ice. We don't want them to be put down or dismissed by men or women in leadership positions. Right? We want them to contribute. We want that path to be clearer. You don't have to struggle every step of the way to be able to make an effective difference. That is a misconception perpetuated by a male-dominated society.
And so, again, keeping that sustained effort, that foot on the gas pedal, are you hopeful for that?
I'm very hopeful for that. I have one of the most rewarding parts of working on this Women's Health Collaborative is the women. You know, every time I get frustrated or we get some other ridiculous email or comment made to us, one of them has enough hope to lift the rest of us up. And by doing that together, even in these last 2 months, we've been able to keep our foot on the gas. And what I will also say is the reason I am hopeful, I knew a lot of these women. I knew how amazing they were. But, you know, when we talk about bringing changes to bear at certain of our societies, at certain journals,
yes,
what you find out is that this person's on this committee, this person's there, this person has this responsibility, and we already have some foothold. We just need to put the pressure on. And again, there's power when there's people standing next to you and behind you. And we are going to leverage that. And we have taken this on and we are not going to let our foot off the gas.
Yes.
There's too much at stake.
It is so true. The power in numbers, the being able to lift each other up when you know, it's like you said, the struggles, like the, you know, you don't want it to be this hill of ice where, and clearing that path. And I think that that's what motivates me, is knowing that these paths are being cleared for future women who deserve access to the good healthcare and better outcomes, and are not just discriminated against.
And not only do they deserve better access and better health outcomes, they should get to see themselves in their providers, right? They should be able to say, that person looks like me, that person understands me, right? And that same diversity should be applied to science and to the approach. And so it's all intertwined. We keep trying to make it separate, that the workforce and the science and the patients and community are separate. They're not separate. Yeah. They're not separate. We can't keep acting in silos.
Yeah.
We won't make a difference. What's important to me is that people stand up. What's important to me is that people join us. It's important to me that even those people that think this is too much, mm-hmm. take a moment to look in the mirror and think and realize that despite what they believe have been the best efforts for the last decades, may just not be enough or are not enough. And that we need everyone to participate. And while we need everyone, we're not going to wait for everyone. So let's be that clear. We're not going to wait for everyone to sign on. We're not going to wait for everyone to say this is okay.
Yes.
We will move forward. And we have enough power as it is, but more are always welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of PAP Talk. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.